This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's June 30th, 1978, and it's side one of tape number 332. In 1966, a book came out by Edward J. Epstein called Inquest. It was published by Viking Press in New York. There have been a lot of controversial remarks about Mr. Epstein in later years attacking Jim Garrison and people investigating the Kennedy assassination, and he recently wrote a total whitewash defending the Warren Commission conclusions. But early in the game, when he came out with a book called Inquest, it was an excellent book. Half of the book was excellent because it showed how the Warren Commission did not do their work of investigating the assassination of John Kennedy. They didn't attend the meetings, they didn't show any interest in the subject, and he has a breakdown of who attended the meetings and how many. The second half of the book goes into the conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin. I always call it a schizophrenic book because if the first half of the book were true, that they didn't do their work, then the second and a half of the book wouldn't make any sense. How could they come to the right conclusion if they didn't do their investigation? So he does go into the mechanics of how the Warren Commission was set up. And when you take that alone and ask the question, why didn't they investigate the murder of the Kennedy, forget his conclusions and look for your own and try to find out who these men were on the Warren Commission that put them in a position of pretending to investigate when they really didn't care. Now, I sent out 30 or 40 copies of that book, COD, to various friends in Los Angeles. We had just moved to Carmel in 1965, and this was 66. And I sent them to members of my family, and I had a letter with the book saying, read this book. This won't tell you that the Nazis are going to take over America in the future or the Nazi connections to the John Kennedy assassination, but if you begin to read all these books on the Kennedy assassination, they will lead you to Adolf Hitler and who was behind the murder of the President of the United States, and this is a starting point. Every single one of these people kept the book and paid for it, with the exception of my father's associate, Rabbi Dubin, who sent me back a letter and said there already is a book out on John Kennedy assassination by Thomas Buchanan called Who Killed Kennedy, and therefore he wasn't interested in reading any more. The basis for my opinion as early as 1966 that the Nazis were involved had to do with various people surrounding Lee and Marina Oswald. One of them was George von Morenschild, who changed his name to de Morenschild, who had been praising Heinrich Himmler at the Petroleum Club. Now, that might have just been an opinion of de Morenschild, and it wasn't certainly hard evidence that Lee Harvey Oswald worked with Nazis as early as 1966. But I had a very strong feeling by the way the commission was set up and the witnesses that were called that the Kennedy murder was one of many murders in the past and a piece of history for the future, that he was just fit in a time slot of a particular moment because of his wanting rapprochement or d'entente with the Soviet Union, or following General Eisenhower's desire to have d'entente with Russia, that the Pentagon would be running the show and that these Nazis who wanted World War II would be retrenching for World War III by killing the leaders as they came along. Another warning of the Nazi movement was Jack Ruby's pleading with Gerald Ford and Leon Jaworski and Earl Warren to tell the truth about what happened, because he said a whole new form of government will come over the United States and that we'll have pogroms in the United States. And a pogrom is, by definition, a slaughter or massacre of Jewish families by Tsarists and Nazis without any provocation or reason except that they happen to be Jews. Now, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there were Nazis that came from Munich, Germany, that joined an organization that was formed for them called Young Americans for Freedom. I didn't know as early as 1966 that William Buckley and Douglas Caddy of Watergate and CIA connections formed the YAF, and the man in the Dallas area who these Nazis met with, Volkmar Schmidt and Larry Schmidt, was Robert Morris, counsel for Richard Nixon's House Internal Security Committee. I didn't know much about the politics of these people when I first started, any more than I knew about Walter Dornberger being a Nazi war criminal and working at Bell Aerospace, and hiring, working at Bell with him was Michael Payne, the host of Lee and Marina Oswald in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Irving, Texas. Of course, this was just one of early books that was coming out that indicated the something was wrong in the land. Later, in 1975, after the Boston Conspiracy Conference, I sent out letters to various members of Congress and personal letters. I enclosed an insert and for various researchers accusing Mark Lane and Bernard Fensterwald and George O'Toole, who had just coming out with his book, The Assassination Tapes, and Robert Sam Anson and the Assassination Information Bureau. I guess this was 1976. I sent this letter accusing these people of protecting the Nazi links to the Kennedy assassination, that the Nazis were the bottom line of the murder, and that they're instigating the network all over the world of Nazis, again, centered in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but it had to do with the New Orleans connections of Clayshaw to world Nazis and the Galen operation and witnesses that Lee and Marina Oswald saw in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that belonged to the Nazi Galen organization and the Tolstoy Foundation, run by the Central Intelligence Agency. And I accused Lane and Fensterwald, O'Toole, Anson, and AIB, and so forth, as being spokesmen for the various researchers, while at the same time making a concerted effort to conceal what Jim Garrison knew about Clayshaw and his Nazi connections and what Sherman Skolnick knew about the Nazis and the various assassinations, that they and myself had to be discredited and put down and ignored, while these other so-called superstars would get books published, do the radio show route, get college lectures, and while they were suppressing information, they appeared to be giving information. But the bottom line has been to suppress the Nazi connections. Before I go into some more about the Nazis and the assassination, specifically the connections of Hallmar Schacht, the war criminal, and Clayshaw from New Orleans, and Hallmar Schacht at Aristotle Onassis, and Schacht with the worldwide Odessa organization, and the funding of Adolf Hitler's team after the war, and also funding Adolf Hitler when he came into power. This one man is a very important name, and we're going to go more into him, but I want to fill up a little bit of the week's news and maybe do the whole other side of this tape on Mr. Hallmar, H-J-A-L-M-A-R, Schacht, S-C-H-A-C-H-T. You have to keep an eye for him and look at various books, bibliographies, and copy pages about him. Type up from the library and send me all references you have to Mr. Schacht, past and present. Before that, as I say, I want to get into a little bit of the news of the week here, which again goes into the past because the present is affected by those dogs or animals, I keep referring to them, who have bungled the past and are in control today. The Monterey Herald, our local paper, Wednesday, June 28, 1978, on the television page has a big article, a lead article that's 3/4 inch high, 2 columns. I can copy them for you if you want copies. It says, K-Wave Buyer says he will exclude Jews from airtime. A K-Wave FM radio station is in Monterey, California. It was bought by James E. Brown, formerly from Cincinnati, and again, your researchers can do some information on him or his past. James E. Brown and Associates, and he has a group of Christian radio stations he set up in Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona. He lives in Phoenix, but he's bought K-Wave in Monterey, California. And what he says that he will exclude all Jews from the station's religious programming. Only Jews who have been converted to Christianity will have any airtime on K-Wave. Now, he's going to continue his classical music. It's our only classical music station on the Monterey Peninsula, so he has a built-in audience that wouldn't boycott the station even if they wanted to. This is from 7 to midnight, 6 days a week. He's going to have religious programs from 6 to 1 and sacred music from 1 to 6. He calls it middle-of-the-road sacred music from 1 to 6. And then his broadcasting ministry service is going to only have Christians, and no Jews will be allowed on K-Wave. Now, I understand that the Federal Communications in Washington said that when he filled out an application, he said that he would not exclude any religious group from programming on the station, that they have to sign an application to not exclude anyone on the basis of religion. But now that the station has been sold to Mr. Brown, he is intending to have only Gentiles or Jews that have converted can use airtime on the Monterey Peninsula. On tape number 329, June 16th, 1978, I talked about the book, the Herbert Hoover Commission Report, and how the National Security Council was formed, and the evils of the National Security Act of 1947 of locating the National Security Council next to the president's office to become, in quotes, to all intents and purposes, part of the presidential office. Last week on the tape, I was denouncing those vile warmongers, Mr. Brzezinski and Mr. Solzhenitsyn, and the advisors to the president who want to get us into a war in Africa and the Middle East. An interesting article came out along those lines about Mr. Brzezinski and the National Security Council, and I only saw it from one source, and I'm going to mention to you, it's from June 1978, from the Christian Science Monitor. Now, this is the only newspaper I've seen this article, and this is, in quotes, what it said. Senator George McGovern has said that he's inclined to favor the abolishing of the position of National Security Advisor to the President, a position currently held by Mr. Brzezinski. They said, they quoted Mr. McGovern, saying the National Security Council staff is an agency which is out of control of the Congress and the American people. As chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on International Operations, Senator George McGovern has decided to call for hearings later this summer to look into the question of how foreign policy is determined and how the National Security Council relates to this policy making. Now, this is one of the most important pieces of news that I've been able to put on tapes, and I'll be using it for other radio shows, and I want you people to follow this up and see what we can do about this. Now, summer hearings are a very bad time for Congress. Children are out of school, families are on vacation, there are long summer days for various hobbies before the winter sets in. The House Select Committee has called for summer hearings, on open hearings televised on the John Kennedy assassination. I know the House Select Committee was going gung-ho in the Watergate investigations, May, June, July. When they took a break from the summer, all interest was lost. Nobody watched. It went off the television and got buried behind some pages in the government printing office. I think these hearings should be put off. These won't be public hearings, but they should not be where all the congressmen are home for the summer and campaigning for their elections in November. This is possibly one of the most important pieces of information for our future and for our children's future to come into the news for this reason. The foreign policies are determined by the corporations. If we need copper in Zaire, we'll take Zaire. If the Belgian Congo still belongs to the Netherlands, they'll go in and take what they need and send advisors to maintain that their profits come from whatever it is that Zaire we need. If we need coffee and minerals from the Uganda, we have Mr. Colby going around saying the CIA or somebody should kill Idi Amin. We don't have them saying about killing the leaders of Brazil, the leaders of Argentina with their death squads, their assassination squads. But if the resources are not controlled by us, if we don't own that country, lock, stock, and barrel, the National Security Advisor put in by David and Nelson Rockefeller, U.S. Steel, General Motors, Ford Motor Company, ITT, is a traveling czarist Nazi front for grabbing world power and world resources, and worst of all, killing off all labor, all fair housing instigations, all fair projects for giving food to the poor and health plans. The genocidal policies are done by the Nazis in the White House. I've always said that Henry Kissinger was a Nazi, not a Jewish family. He was just honored down in Argentina this week with a degree and then went off to Brasilia for lunch. And in Brazil, and he is the darling of the Saudi Arabian Egyptian Nazi clique all over the world. The way our foreign policy is determined is not done by the will of the people. In 50 states, we pay our taxes for these weapons we don't need and the overcost. In 50 states, we send our children and the children's children out to fight battle. In 50 states, we have lost the right to preserve our land, keep it from pollution, get health plans, fair employment, security in the old age, Social Security money running out. We are losing our rights all the time, and they're done because these people, like Mr. Brzezinski and advisors like Solzhenitsyn and Kissinger, are part of a foreign clique. They're not even Americans, and they are the people. that make our foreign policy. The corporations make the policies, and when the wills of the people, will of the people is there, it will go through various congressmen if they're not paid by Howard Hughes and the Korean CIA and their bloody payoffs from overseas money that comes back here through these watering, money skimming and laundering processes. So this is very important to write to Senator George McGovern and say we're all for getting Mr. Brzezinski not only out of the White House but out of the country. I would hang him by his heels like Mussolini. But it's a start to know who determines the way that we go to war, invade countries, and how they run the White House. As I mentioned before on the tape, on the National Security Council, formed in 1947, which I said was formed by the Gestapo and Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles and the spy systems with all the clauses for them to kill or do whatever they want. When you break down how this was structured, you can rebuild a country based on checks and balances. There was a report this week that you might or might not have seen, a report from the National Transportation Safety Board, that U-2 spy pilot Francis Gary Powers crashed to his death because he mismanaged, in quotes, his fuel supply for his helicopter. If you believe that, you believe that 17 cows are going to jump over the moon tonight. The plane crashed August 1st, 1977, just a short time after the so-called suicide of George de Morenschild, and also a short time after the House Select Committee began their investigation of the assassination of John Kennedy. And then the linear connection, again, of Gary Powers to those infamous Nazis that I talk about all the time, because that Powers said that he believed Lee Harvey Oswald had downed his U-2 plane to break up the Entente over the Soviet Union. Now, Oswald worked at a radio factory run by Alexander Zeiger, who introduced him to the infamous czarist bitch, Marina Oswald, the notorious agent of the intelligence community, the Tolstoy Foundation, and the CIA Greek Orthodox Church. The CIA wanted to bring Alexander Zeiger's children to Argentina after the assassination of John Kennedy. The Soviet Union has Reinhard Gehlen's agents inside Russia. He was brought from Argentina to the Minsk radio factory. I don't know why the Soviets let him in, but certainly inside the Soviet Union are these deep cover spies working Nazis of the Gehlen operation, passed off as KGB or officials. I don't know how Zeiger and his family got back from Argentina to Minsk. You would think that the Russians and their KGB and NKD would be so sharp that they would not bring back people from Argentina to a strategic place like Minsk. But one explanation of allowing these Nazis back is to keep track of them and who they know. And the Odessa, the spider organization run by these various Nazis, maybe they brought him back here, Zeiger, from Argentina to the radio factory with their permission. They allowed Soviet woman Marina Oswald, a czarist, to be close to Alexander Zeiger. Lee Harvey Oswald met Marina through Zeiger. And of course, if the Soviet spy system kept track of this triangle of Marina, Lee, and Zeiger, they had the goods on the United States. And one thing I hope is that if Mr. Brzezinski tries to get us into another war in Africa or Middle East, that the Soviet Union will begin to expose some pieces of this puzzle that they must know about and try to stop this madness of escalating the war one more time. Another witness that was murdered who had Nazi connections to the assassination, who worked with the Nazis and the World Odessa, was William Sullivan of Division 5 of the FBI. Now, William Kunstler, the lawyer, is claiming that the fatal shooting of William Sullivan had to do with his testifying against Patrick Gray and Mark Felt and Edward Miller, men that were arrested, FBI agents high up in the FBI who've been arrested. And Mr. Kunstler claims that they would have their case tightened up if Sullivan had lived to testify against them. But I don't believe that William Sullivan was shot because of the testimony against FBI officials. I believe he was shot because more and more material is coming out about Permandex and the links of William Sullivan to Division 5 and George de Morenschild and the assassination. And the big story in the country isn't really the fact that three FBI men illegally took documents or wiretapped the weathermen in New York City. I think that they could stand trial on that and have a fair shake and, under the guise of national security, get probation and a slap on the wrist. I don't think there's any reason to shoot William Sullivan with a .30-06 deer rifle bullet in New Hampshire last November just because Patrick Gray, Mark Felt, and Edward Miller might get a slap on the hand. I think that William Sullivan was shot because of his knowledge of the whole international assassination teams that have been set up for years and still are working to this day. Again, Mark Lane and Mr. William Kunstler and these various people pass themselves off as liberals who represent the underdog and the weak members of our society, and I accuse them, really, of concealing the Nazification of the world since World War II. Those are pretty strong charges, but I really believe that they go through a facade of caring while the world is becoming Nazi. Interesting, Clay Shaw, at the time he was arrested by Jim Garrison, was described as an old-fashioned liberal. The various people said, how would you describe him? And he said, well, he was a liberal of the Wilson-Roosevelt persuasion. He was a Stevensonian liberal. He stood by and admired Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Adlai Stevenson, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy. He had the facade, like, say, a Kunstler, Lane, of caring about the Vietnamese, the Indians, the underdog, Lee Harvey Oswald, or James Earl Ray. But strangely enough, when it comes to the push and shove, they are protecting the Nazis, and they get violent against a person who suggests that Nazis were involved in the assassination. Clay Shaw worked with the highest Nazis of World War II right up until the time of his death, but on the surface he was known as an art person in New Orleans who reconstructed the old French Quarter and kept a political facade of being a left-ish kind of a Democrat. His actual connections were with the extreme, extreme rightist murdering dogs, so that who people associate with or dine with or vote for or what they say isn't really as important as who they protect, who they attack, and what they do, how they're funded, and the modus operandi with which they move. There's a new movie out, which I have not seen. I've only read reviews of it, but some of you who get these tapes are lucky enough to be in big cities to get some of these foreign movies, and I'll have to go to San Francisco to see this. I'm sure it will never play in Carmel, Monterey. The movie is called Lucio Flavio, The Passenger of Agony. And again, getting back to the Nazi theme that you will hear me mentioning over and over again, probably, with everything we talk about on these tapes. Flavio was murdered in a cell in Brazil in 1975. He was very much a part of the death squad and knew about the activities of the death squad. He had committed murders and burglaries. He was no saint. But when he was in jail, he dictated certain letters before his death to a reporter. And the reporter took these letters, and they are the result of these letters is a movie about the death squad in Brazil. Now, these death squad were started 20 years ago. The old idea of a trial and courts and juries and judges has been thrown out since Nazi Germany. Certainly there were a lot of countries where there were never fair trials before. But Brazil was a big center of evacuation of many Nazis. So from the 1944-45 up to 58, it gave them a lot of time to be entrenched into the presidency with the coup that took place the same year after John Kennedy was killed. The coup took place in 64 with a military dictatorship. And, of course, it is the home of Nazis that became entrenched immediately into the government and police forces of Brazil. The police lead these vigilantes. The purpose of them is to hunt any leftists or subversives or guerrillas. There's no more monkey trials like there were in Germany. Remember, the courts were perversed and turned around to make the innocent look guilty and the guilty out on the streets. In Brazil and in many countries, Argentina has these death squads. The United States has the death squads. They just go out and kill them. That's what the criminal conspiracy section and the intelligence system of Los Angeles police, California prison system, kill certain people like George Jackson, and various men are locked up in prison. For the rest of their lives, they'll be lucky if they get out, like Hugo Pinel, the organizer, and there are many attempts to kill him. But this movie is about the death squads and how the police supply the weapons to known criminals and organize bank robberies and kill various people off who are leftists. The important thing about this movie is that until recently, the middle class in Brazil was perfectly happy with the death squads, just like the middle class in America is perfectly happy with various political leaders being gunned down, and also then their killers like Lee Harvey Oswald being shot right afterwards. That's a death squad in the United States where you don't need a court trial for Lee Harvey Oswald. You get rid of him fast. Witnesses to trials such as Gary Powers, George DeMoranchild, Carlos Prio Siqueiros, these various people, William Sullivan, are killed by our American death squads. Well, this movie is about the Brazilian squads that have been going on for 20 years. Sergio Peranos Fleury is the head of the death squad division. He's been tried publicly several times through publicity for the murder of a particular offender 10 years ago. He was indicted 22 times for death squad executions, but he never has gone to jail, and he's still acquitted of all charges. His most famous death in Brazil was Carlos Marighella, who wrote a book on organizing for leftists that was later put in the hands of the CIA SLA members as a mockery. And, of course, those six people were burned alive in Los Angeles by the Los Angeles Police Department death squad. See the movie Lucio Flavio, The Passenger of Agony, and realize that this isn't just in Brazil, that this is happening all over the world, and that everywhere you investigate it, you're going to find the Nazis behind these organizations that are doing the killings all the way up to the top. In fact, Hugo Pinel said that the prison guards, I believe it was Hugo, one of the men testifying at the San Quentin 6 trial, said that guards at San Quentin had Nazi uniforms and pictures of Adolf Hitler right in their prison offices. This is in the trial transcript of the San Quentin 6. Warren Burger, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, the infamous attorney who originally flew to California to change the new Constitution and eliminate trial by jury, was the leading author of the 4-3 decision this week that the news media has limited access to prisons and mental institutions in the United States. U.S. Supreme Court ruled that public officials can place strict limits on the rights of the press and public to investigate situations in prisons and mental institutions, not only in California, where the case first came up, but throughout the entire nation. KQED and other newspapers wanted to go into the Santa Rita prison here in Alameda County to see if there were inhumane conditions and what the maximum security section is like in that prison. But Warren Burger wrote that, as the majority opinion, he said in quotes, "The news media has no right of access beyond that of any other public person to interview inmates or to film or to record any conditions in any jail or mental institutions." KQED's news director, George Osterkamp, said this decision is, in quotes, "a major setback." He said it's unrealistic because the public and the taxpayers will never find out what goes on inside their prisons. If press access is limited, we will never know, because if we have the same rights as the general public, that means that you simply go in, sometimes stay behind bars, prisoners are brought chained to a window, and you can't photograph the conditions or have any idea what goes on in mental hospitals or prisons. Now, here's an interesting comment on that decision. Of course, Chief Justice Burger and William Rehnquist of the CIA voted to limit the press. Remember that Nixon's court now is making these decisions, 4-3 decisions over and over and over again. The Bakke decision, this white, they described him as this Nordic white engineer, put in by the YAF, encouraged through NASA. He works at NASA, which was originally formed with Nazis that came over here from Germany, told to run in the medical school contest, even though he was in his 30s, to get in. Mr. Bakke won his decision by the same Supreme Court. Watch these decisions coming down now. One of the decisions of this limiting access to the prisons, in quotes, Mr. Stewart said, "A person touring Santa Rita can grasp its reality with his eyes and ears, but if a television reporter is to convey the jail sights and sounds, he must use cameras and sound equipment." They went on to say that the courts may further consider the constitutional role of the press and the institutional requirements of jail. I think this is important because you as taxpayers have to live both with the the people who are locked up and the people who come out, what are they like when they come out? What is it like to live in there? What are the conditions? In California alone, there's 27,000 people living in prisons, in the California prison system. Right now, 27,000, and the press cannot see the conditions of those institutions. And in addition, there are many, many thousands in mental hospitals, and now we learn that they don't have the right to go into photograph and take conditions of the mental hospitals where so many people have died, and those investigations were hushed up this last year. Inside two now, we'll go into Mr. Hallmark, shocked, Clay Shaw and the Kennedy assassination.